Welcome in, and this is fun right here. Yes, it's late August, but also, yes, it's time for some first draft talk. I am Field DH, joined today by two men who have been studying the 2024 NFL draft since the second the 2023 NFL draft was over. They don't need an introduction, but we'll do it anyways. Matt Miller, what is going on, my friend?
Field, it's great to be on first draft with you, with our guy Jordan as well. I'm so pumped. We've got week zero in the bag already. I know we're going to talk a lot about that, but man, it's great to be here with you.
And Jordan Reed, who the only thing that can distract you from draft prep is calling games now. Mr. This is awesome. Big time calling games during the college football season. Congratulations, my friend, and great to talk to you as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here with you guys, and it's fun just going back and forth between high school kids and watching college prospects too, seeing some guys we'll probably be talking about here in the next 3 or 4 years.
I was going to say, Matt and I are now behind on our 2027 NFL draft prep because Jordan is already grinding the tape of guys that are still juniors or seniors in high school. The subject of today's show will be sort of an introduction to the 2024 NFL draft, and it's going to be a doozy in Detroit. But we have a very perfect template to work off, which is Matt's most recent NFL mock draft for 2024. Yes, it's early. Matt, do you need me to defend you? Because 6 months from now, when people go back and visit your mock draft, they're going to say, wait, how was this guy not included? Why was this guy included? Do you want to sort of take that on yourself?
I got you, Field. I've been doing this a long time. Yeah. I always say that this is it's just the start of the forecast. You know, when looking at next year's draft, players should change. We should see guys get better and move up this board. Like Tyree Wilson last year, a guy Jordan was really early on, watching him climb throughout the process, watching Anthony Richardson climb throughout the process. So we should see names enter into this list over the course of the season. We might see names drop off as well. Yeah. I think that's kind of the fun part for those of us who evaluate players for a living is watching that rise and fall. And now with NIL, we might even have accomplished players like Olufashanu and Jared Verse who went back to school last year. It's an ever-changing landscape. It makes it a lot of fun, though.
We do not have Jared Verse as one of our discussion points for this show. But for those that don't know about the Florida State defensive end, you will very soon. He's going to be a star again this year. I want to figure out, there needs to be a 30 for 30 on how Jared Verse got recruited to Albany and redshirted at Albany. That, to me, will be a mystery forever, unless he gives me like a very coherent explanation that I am not currently aware of. The other part about Matt's mock draft that I think is important to remind people is that Matt did not determine the draft order. It's not his forecast about how these teams are going to finish this season. I believe it's the ESPN FBI projections. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's not me, Twitter. It's not, or X or whatever, Threads, whatever you're on. That's not my projection at all.
Okay, so let's get to it, and I will let you start off here, Matt. The least surprising pick, maybe since, I'm guessing probably Trevor Lawrence, but I was going to say, maybe even as far back as Andrew Luck a decade ago. The Arizona Cardinals, number one pick in the draft, and they take Caleb Williams. Everybody knows the name, Heisman Trophy winner last year, his true junior season coming up at USC. When you think back about where he stacks up to some of the great quarterback prospects you've seen over the past decade, what kind of breath is he breathing right now?
Yeah, he's up there with, you mentioned Trevor Lawrence, Andrew Luck. I think he's in that category. I wrote an article over the summer actually talking to scouts about where would he slot in and where does everyone kind of slot in over the past 5 years. He's at the top, and we've seen some great quarterbacks come out. Joe Burrow in that same area. So I think he has the potential to be mentioned in that. This is I hate this term, but a generational quarterback prospect that even a team like the Arizona Cardinals, who recently took a quarterback in Kyler Murray, number one overall, here we are 4 years later after giving him a monster contract where we're saying, if Caleb Williams is there, you kind of have to take him. He's that good of a prospect.
Yeah, and we can dive into the Kyler conversation more as we get later into the season if this becomes real. But Jordan, what would you say stands out as the things that Caleb does at a rare level? And if there are any areas that you're looking forward to him improving this season, what might those small areas be?
Well, I think it's just his poise, Field. He has outstanding poise, and it's inside the pocket. But what really makes him special is just his wizardry outside of it. And he has phenomenal throws throughout the year. You can point to any game throughout last season. We were talking about the Utah game a little bit earlier. Either one of those games when he matched up against them, I thought he played really well in both of those games. And there's so many others. The Notre Dame one was one of my favorite ones that he played in last year. But it's just the poise and the pressurized situations. Nothing phases him. And we saw it last week against San Jose State in the week zero game. He drops the snap and he just chucks the ball down 50 yards down the field for a 76-yard touchdown. Those are the types of plays that just have scouts salivating over Williams. And if there was one thing I would like to see him improve on, I think it would just be not try to be a home run hitter all the time. It's okay to hit singles and doubles sometimes, but when you have that type of innate ability to create outside of the pocket, you kind of lean on that a little bit heavily. And Lincoln Riley, we know he's a aggressive coach. He likes to go down the field quite a bit. So there's a lot of times where he doesn't give him a check down, and he's very reliant on Caleb Williams making plays out of structure. So just be okay with those check downs sometimes. I think that's the next development in this game that I want to see him take this season.
Yeah, living to see the next down is an important thing at the NFL level. I think even Patrick Mahomes, for as great as he is, would tell you that he learned that from year one to year two as a starting quarterback. Like, he evolved so much mentally on top of the physical development that came along with being, at the time, a third-year player in the NFL. Matt, right after pick one, the Arizona Cardinals are back up again. And if they got a potentially generational quarterback prospect at pick one, might they be doing the same thing at a different position at pick two?
Yeah, go get a potentially generational prospect at wide receiver with Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, you, this trade with the Houston Texans that happened last year allowed them to move up to secure Will Anderson and CJ Stroud at the 2-3 spot could really, kickstart a rebuild in Arizona. You have Paris Johnson, who I think could play left tackle in the NFL at a high level if they need to slide him over at right tackle. We'll see how he does in his rookie year. But if you can have Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison out there, that sounds as can't miss as you can get. Marvin is special. Folks who remember his dad, he's bigger than his dad. He's 6'4", 215. He runs beautifully. He's so smooth, attacks the ball. And we know, guys, that Ohio State can produce some wide receiver talent. Yeah. So he's coming into the NFL very well coached, and Brian Hartline has him ready to go.
So to that point, Jordan, how is he different then? Because if you do the math now, we're, 3 first-round receivers in the past 2 years from Ohio State. And Marvin Harrison, at least my August 28th forecast, he will probably not be the only first round pick from the Ohio State receiver room this year. But how is he different? Maybe how is he better than those other guys who have recently entered the draft?
Well, whenever you're struggling to come up with negatives for a prospect, we're talking about somebody that's very, very special. But the body control that he has, he just makes some miraculous catches, and he makes the hard catches look very easy. And there was one catch on the sideline against Indiana of where he was able to get 1 foot down. And you're like, man, how in the world did he come down with that catch? But 6'4", 215 pounds, Matt talked about it. His body control is exceptional. He has outstanding hands. And you're going to hear the names Jamar Chase, Calvin Johnson, AJ Green, Julio Jones. He's on the same tier as those guys. And it wouldn't surprise me if he challenges Calvin Johnson to be the highest drafted wide receiver this century at number 2 overall. That's the type of prospect that we're talking about with Marvin Harrison Jr.
I know that we're getting, again, everything about this podcast is ahead of ourselves, right? Like, it's August. These guys haven't, in the case, except for 6 teams or 6 games, have not played a game yet during what's probably going to be their final season. But Matt, taking a receiver at 2 requires rare. And it also requires a team that already has a quarterback locked up. Do we think that, all things being equal, because we have no idea who's going to pick 2, if it wasn't Arizona, if it was a team that had a little bit less certainty at quarterback than Arizona would if they had Caleb Williams in their hands at pick 1, is Marvin Harrison a justifiable pick, or is this a situation where currently your mock draft aligns more with the idea that we can't make trades, so let's just slot a player this high because you don't want Arizona taking back-to-back quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think it's both, Field. I really do. I think he's justifiable at number 2 overall. It does help that they just selected a quarterback 1 spot before that. But I think I don't want to throw any teams in this bucket. But let's say, if it's the Washington Commanders or the Atlanta Falcons, a team that has a young quarterback, where it's like, year 2 quarterbacks are starting. That's where the conversation gets interesting of, okay, do you now try to get that young quarterback some help with a top 2 selection? Or, like you said, we can't trade. I think there would be a rush to trade up to this spot, no matter who has the pick. But he's worth going number 2 overall. Like Jordan said, this century, we've only seen Calvin Johnson do it. I think, even if a team who has the number 1 pick is comfortable at the quarterback position, like the Chicago Bears last year. Yeah. If they had the number 1 pick overall this year, I think they would just take Marvin Harrison Jr. and say, okay, we're good with this player because he is that special.
He is so fun to watch. Go ahead, Jordan.
And I was going to say, I was talking to a scout the other day. I think we're at the point now of where wide receiver is a premium position just because we've seen how these guys just fly off of the board, especially inside the top 15 picks. If you go back the past 5 years, these guys have flew off of the board. And then also, whenever you have a young quarterback, you want to have that established wide receiver 1 to help take them to the next level. We saw it last year when the Eagles acquired A.J. Brown in the trade and how that helped Jalen Hurts take that next step. So Marvin Harrison Jr. could be that type, let's just say, for Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis, a team that's probably not going to win a whole bunch of football games this year. And his dad was pretty good for that team, too. So
Jordan, please speak that into existence. Please. Please let that happen.
No way they could pass on Pass him up, right?
In my scouting days, we used to talk about the get off the bus guys. You know, the guys that, like, the minute they walk off the bus, the other team starts to kind of rethink whether they should be playing today. That would be the ultimate quarterback wide receiver get off the bus duo.
Oh, yeah.
Anthony Richardson at 6'4", 244 pounds, and Marvin Harrison Jr. at 6'3", and maybe closer to 220 by the time he's bulked up for the combine next March. Let's go to pick number three. And back, Matt, I'll go back to you. I'll let you lead off each of these because it's your mock draft, and we'll flip that when Jordan gets his mock draft out at some point later on this college football season. Pick three goes to the Buccaneers, who, by the way, if you're a Buccaneers fan that is like, there's no way we're going to have the third overall pick in this upcoming draft, here's the good news. If it does happen, it's because your team had to bottom out because you won the Super Bowl a few years ago with Tom Brady.
Right.
It's okay. This is called the circle of life in football. If not for the fact that Caleb Williams was in this draft, Matt, are we talking about Drake May as an obvious number one overall pick?
Yeah, we absolutely are, Field. And if you are a Buccaneers fan and you're looking at this mock draft and listening to this podcast and you're upset, please don't be, because no disrespect to Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask, getting Drake May is a great consolation prize for a team that's just a couple years removed from a Super Bowl win and having the GOAT at quarterback. So Drake May, you're going to hear so many comparisons to Justin Herbert over the next 9 months. I think they're
even
justifiable.
The hair.
It's the hair, right? He's 6'4", 230, everything, right? He's just the other coast. He's the opposite coast, Justin Herbert. But I can't wait to see what he does this year. He's first year starter last year, and we're putting a comp on him like Justin Herbert. That speaks to how well he played last year and really a breakout season. 38 touchdowns to just 7 interceptions. He's got a strong arm. He's mobile in and out of the pocket. So yeah, Tampa fans, don't be too mad at us, because I think we just gave you a player that could be a potential top 10 NFL quarterback.
I never know if fans who are listening to these podcasts know this or if it's something that I latch onto too much. In college, when you're a quarterback, when you take a sack for 7 yards, they count that as negative rushing yards for you, which I mentioned only because, like, that makes high rushing totals even more impressive. And Jordan, he had 698 rushing yards last season, most on the entire team. Are we talking about a player that will be at his best in, like, the Jalen Hurts type mold? I know Justin Herbert was one of the names that Matt mentions a comp. Or is this a guy that, because of his stature, because of the body armor being 6'4" and 230 pounds, can be the kind of winner who plays mostly from the pocket?
Yeah, I think he can do both. He's a very underrated athlete too, just like Caleb Williams. They use those guys quite frequently in the quarterback design runs. They get them out on bootlegs. They get them out on sprint outs too. So he can play inside. He can play outside. Daniel Jones has been another common comparison for him. And don't think of Daniel Jones as a prospect. Think more so of it, his current state right now. And Daniel Jones has turned out to be a lot better than what people thought he was going to be coming to the draft. So another thing I want to mention about Drake May is that, and me and the scout were talking about this as well, he went 2 years without playing football. He lost his senior year to COVID, and then he sat behind Sam Howell his freshman season. So we're talking about a player that really stepped on the football field for the first time last year as a starter, and he was phenomenal last year. And I know he struggled a little bit down the backstretch. There were some positive moments in the game against Oregon last year in the bowl game, but down the backstretch against Clemson, he didn't play very well. So he's already came out and said that I'm going to play very well, and I'm on a mission this year. So starting off against South Carolina here this weekend, I'm really interested to see how he does.
You know, athletic bloodlines in the entire family for the May. So what, he's got two brothers that played sports at UNC. One, of course, Sean May, Luke May and Colt. Wait, hold on. Now I'm going to screw this up. Luke May. They're all kinds of brothers there. Remember Sean May, the power forward way back in the day at UNC. Yeah. But Luke May, a more recent version of a North Carolina power forward who was a part of that national championship team. He's got a brother who pitched at Florida. His dad went to North Carolina. I mean, we were talking about an athletic family from start to finish. But Drake May, make no mistake about it, who just turns 21 on Wednesday of this week. So super young player as well. One of the themes of this class in reading Matt's mock is there are a lot of early entrants. And some guys who, even if they aren't early entrants, like Olu Fashanu from Penn State, who we're not talking about, entered college at such a young age. You're seeing a lot of like 20, 21, 22-year-old first-round picks. I think, and you guys may know better, was Christian Gonzalez the youngest first-round pick this past year? He was definitely up there. It might have been Anthony Richardson. One of those two. We had a little more veteran first-round class this past year because of the COVID year. I think we're going to start to see some of these really young first-round picks. Let's move forward to pick eight. And you just talked about Sam Howell a moment ago. At number eight, the Commanders are taking a quarterback here, Matt. If they're picking eight, it probably means that Sam Howell did not pan out as like this surefire starter. Who would they turn to instead?
Yeah, you're talking about young players. Let's go to Texas, where Quinn Ewers is also, you know, another 20-year-old guy who reclassified, misses his senior year of high school, goes to Ohio State, loses the battle to CJ Stroud, sits out a year, goes back home to Texas, takes over for the Longhorns last year, and flashed really beautiful potential. Ewers at 8 is about potential, though. He has not accomplished himself right now as a top 10 player. This is a projection. We're going to see a third quarterback climb into this area. I think we say that pretty much every year outside of the 2022 class. Someone's going to climb up there. I'm projecting right now it will be him. Texas is absolutely loaded with star power at wide receiver and tight end, a very good young offensive line. And Steve Sarkisian is a very, very good quarterbacks coach. So Ewers has that talent. Another player who has, in his own words, grown up this offseason physically and emotionally, mentally. He cut the mullet. He added some weight to his frame. I think we're going to see a more athletic quarterback this year, but I'm expecting big things for him.
And Jordan, if he finishes the season as the starter, it will mean that he staved off Arch Manning. What kind of ceiling do you see for Quinn Ewers?
I think he has immense talent, and Matt hit the nail on the head as far as it's all about potential with Quinn Ewers. He's been very hyped up coming into Ohio State and then into Texas as well, but he just hasn't been able to match it consistently. And if you watch him against the first quarter against Alabama, you're like, oh yeah, this looks like a number one overall prospect before he went out with the injury. And then you watch him against Oklahoma State and you're like, this doesn't even look like a draftable quarterback. So it's just a matter of him finding that fine line of talent and then matching it with the potential that we see with him consistently. So I'm looking forward to seeing him play going into Tuscaloosa against Alabama. That's his first resume game that I like to call it, as opposed to playing at home against Alabama this year. But that's going to be a big, big matchup for him. But if he's able to match the hype, we're talking about a first round type of quarterback.
Yeah, that Alabama defense, as you might have guessed, is loaded. Multiple players from that defense cracked Matt's top 32 in his most recent mock draft. Let's go to pick 17, Matt. So we'll move a little bit further down the order and also move away from the quarterbacks here for a second. As a fan of college football over the past couple of years, there's few players that I've enjoyed watching as much as Brock Bowers. And I feel like it's been a while since we've seen this kind of tight end come out into the draft. What kind of player are the Texans getting and the pick that would be acquired from the Cleveland Browns in the Deshaun Watson trade?
Yeah, we kind of nerded out earlier about Marvin Harrison Jr. going with Anthony Richardson, but let's also talk about putting Brock Bowers with CJ Stroud and some of the weapons they have down there. Bowers is the closest thing you're going to find to George Kittle in college football. This is an athletic, albeit maybe slightly undersized, 6'4". I think he's listed at 240. We'll see what he actually comes in at once he does declare for the draft, but he's a do-it-all weapon. He's going to play inline. He's going to play in the slot. He's going to play tailback at times. Georgia is just saying, let's get this dude the football, and we'll see. New offensive coordinator Mike Bobo comes in. I'm excited to see how they build an offense around him. He's going to be a safety valve for a new quarterback in Carson Beck. So the numbers may fluctuate. The production might fluctuate from what we saw last year where he had 10 total touchdowns, but he is the ideal run after catch tight end in today's NFL game. And 17 is probably too late for him. Yeah. It's just hard to slot in a tight end in the top 10 unless you look like Kyle Pitts. So we'll see if where Bowers lands. I think it'll be earlier than 17, though.
And Jordan, just some perspective on this. You know, last year we were talking about Darnell Washington, who some thought could have gone in the first round if not for a bulky knee in the pre-draft process. He was the other tight end at Georgia. So just on a team that's been so loaded over the past couple of years, has produced the number one overall pick 2 years ago and plenty of top 10 picks. How does Brock Bowers sort of stand relative to all these Georgia playmakers that have come out over the past few years?
Well, I'm going to go lofty here, and I know it's August, but I think he's an even better prospect than what Kyle Pitts was coming out. And that's not to say that he's going to go higher than Kyle Pitts, but I just think the total package, you get more from Brock Bowers. There's so many different ways that you can use him. And he's just a let's see what happens player. What I mean by that is just get it in his hands and let's just see what happens. You know, something positive is going to come out of it. But I think he's a more natural catcher than what Pitts was coming out. But where the difference is the run after catch ability. Yeah. They give him the ball on jet sweeps. They just toss the ball up to him when he plays in line down the slot or he runs up the seam. There's so many different ways you can get Brock Bowers the ball. Over 900 receiving yards last year, over 500 came after the catch. So that just goes to show you that this is a big time tight end prospect. And it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up going top 10.
By the way, I love that Matt's comp was George Kittle, because Brock Bowers in a Kyle Shanahan offense would probably win. Like, he'd probably be first team all pro, like, from the moment he steps in the NFL, because he is the yak king amongst tight ends. The guy, I felt like every time I turned on Georgia last year, it was like, oh, Brock Bowers runs like a 1 yard out route, and he takes it 77 yards for a touchdown. An incredible player on a team loaded with star potential down there in Athens. Of course, they'll be very good again this year. Hey, Georgia fans that might be listening right now, they're not being overlooked. Believe it or not, like, only one team can be number one.
No.
So just because you be, like, it's okay. It's okay. You're allowed to be, like, you know, the third ranked team in college football and still be very respected. I wanted to go to pick number 18. And my hesitation in being, like, very specific about pick versus a team or with a team, it's just the idea that there's so much that can change between now and later. But I figured if Matt, who knows, of course, that the Dolphins have Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle on their roster, wants to give them another wide receiver, it's because the kid's special. Xavier Worthy from Texas, a team that we talked about earlier with Quinn Ewers. What kind of player are we looking at here that the Dolphins will be adding? Even like my blind guess, even though I know about him, but if I didn't, I just imagine he runs like a 4.25 40.
Yeah, he's really, really fast. He's so, like, imagine Hollywood Brown coming out of college. Like, it's that type of player. Just, he's going to run right past you. And this is now, you know, the best track team in the NFL if you add Xavier Worthy to this wide receiver room. I think something interesting with this pick, and I don't remember if it made the cut room in the article, is that
I'll tell you right now,
Tyreek Hill has said he might not play much longer. You know, he might not play well into his 30s. So this is also about the future. But Xavier Worthy, perfect for Mike McDaniel. Now, the thing is, he's got to clean up some drop issues that happened last year. There were, Jordan mentioned the Oklahoma State game. It would get cold and Xavier Worthy's hands would stop working. So he's got to clean that up this year. You can't just be a warm weather wide receiver. Although it's South Beach, you'd be okay with that. But Worthy's got to, I think, you know, there's always been a stigma around Texas football that maybe players aren't as tough as, you know, an Alabama or an LSU or a Georgia. I think Worthy is one of those guys that he's got to put that chip on his shoulder this year and show opponents and scouts that he's going to be out there in November making the tough catches.
What do you think there, Jordan? The kind of player, and man, two Texas guys already. This must mean
I do
Texas
like that.
Could be back. Like, Texas could be back, Jordan.
I would have never guessed that. I would have never guessed that coming from Matt, right?
Yeah.
but Xavier Worthy, you talk about the track speed that he has, and just go turn on the Alabama tape. I mean, he's running by all of their defensive backs, Kool-Aid McKinstry, every single one. He's running right by all of those guys. But he's a Jekyll and Hyde type of player of where you're going to have to deal with some drops with him just because that's exactly who he was last year. But the positive about it is that he opens up all three levels of the defense just because he can take the top off. He can run some things underneath on the shallow crossers, the drag routes. You can give him a screen from time to time, but his body strength isn't where it needs to be right now just because I think he's listed at like 165 pounds.
Oh, wow.
Even though he's 6 foot real. Tall. Yeah. So he's a bit of a slender guy. You kind of want to run a straight line, but he did have over 8% drop rate last year, which is alarmingly high for a wide receiver. So he has to clean up some drops, but he definitely takes off the top of the defense for sure.
At pick 21, the Vikings are on the clock, this proverbial clock that FPI made for us, and they are taking a quarterback here, Matt, because Kirk Cousins, as we all know, is not under contract for 2024. Who is it?
Yeah, I went J.J. McCarthy here, another potential pick. And I think with McCarthy, you almost have to not look at his stats. You can't box score scout J.J. McCarthy because Michigan has the two best running backs maybe in the country, and Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards. It's a very conservative passing attack, but he was able to break out in that scheme last year. And we see, you know, the moving the pocket, making throws on the go. When they cut the field in half, he's surgical with his ability to get the ball out to all the different levels. So I think he's a great fit in, you know, this kind of Sean McVay type offense that Kevin O'Connell's running in Minnesota. Is very much Kevin's, but kind of that idea of let's move the pocket, let's get the ball to our playmakers. With no Kirk Cousins, they didn't make the trade for Trey Lance. A lot of people thought it happened to bring him home to Minneapolis. Yeah. I think JJ at 21 is you at least have to be having the quarterback conversation for Minnesota.
Let's talk ceiling here for a second, Jordan. If he reaches this potential, like, what kind of ceiling are we discussing? Is he the kind of player that could push to be in that top three quarterback range? Or is this class going to be defined by a top tier and then a gap to the next group of quarterbacks?
I honestly think the latter. Honestly, I think May and Williams, there's going to be a gap from everybody else with those two guys just because they're so special at the top. But that third quarterback is very similar to last year when Richardson and Levis, we were talking about them a lot. And this class is very similar now. It's much different with the senior class and then also the graduate transfer pool. This is a really, really deep senior class overall. But that third quarterback, we're really just projecting right now. We've mentioned two already. There's some people excited about Michael Penix, Bo Nix at Oregon. Yeah. There's plenty of other players that we could talk about in the senior class. But just staying on subject with J.J. McCarthy, he's probably – of all the prospects or quarterbacks, I should say, that I watched this summer, he probably was the most surprising at how much that I liked him, honestly. And he's awesome off of play action. Like he's so comfortable with turning his back to the defense, resetting his eyes. So he complements that Michigan running game really well. And Harbaugh kind of held his hand a little bit early on in the season, but he started to take the training wheels off a little bit late. And that's where he saw him make some of the mistakes. And we saw it in the college football playoff. He didn't play very well versus TCU. So I do expect Harbaugh to take the training wheels off, but we know Harbaugh wants to run the ball. So, and I think just looking back at the stats from what I remember, he only had six games of where he attempted 25 or more passing attempts. So I expect that number to climb up a little bit with him having another year in the system. So let's just see how much Harbaugh trusts him this year. But his ability to play off of play action and complement that running game, I was really, really surprised at how much I liked him.
All right, so Michigan is a just a school to remember this year because there are some, I think both of you included, that think they could push for the all-time record in terms of how many draft picks from a single school in a single draft. They are absolutely freaking loaded. Not necessarily like in the way that Georgia's been loaded over the past couple of years for like, you know, top three or five picks, maybe even multiple guys in the top five, I don't think, for Michigan, but the depth is scary. We could see a ton of guys go from this Wolverines team this season in the upcoming draft. All right, I know the exercise has been going to Matt first and letting Jordan follow, but Jordan, I know you. I've seen you tweet about a certain safety that Matt has going number 22 overall to the Chargers, yet another USC playmaking safety. Tell us a bit more.
Yeah, Kalen Bullock, a player that is probably going to be one of the more polarizing prospects in this draft class overall, just because he's a specific type of safety and he's a rangy free safety type. He can play center field, but the big dilemma about him, I should say, is that can he improve the tackling? And you saw some of the struggles against San Jose State last week in week zero. He has to improve the tackling, but there's going to be some teams that say, hey, let's just keep him on the roof and let's let him play center field. So it really is just going to depend on the type of scheme that he's in, but the pass coverage skills, he's the complete package. And he had five interceptions last year. You just see him, he has sideline to sideline range. So he's going to be a bit polarizing, but he's a scheme specific safety that's going to have to play free safety.
Matt, your thoughts on him?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And you see him, like you said, Phil, he's one of those first guys off the bus, like the 6'3 rangy safety. He doesn't want to come down and put pads on you. And maybe that's a business decision until he's getting paid by the NFL. We'll see. Maybe he becomes a better tackler. But I love his versatility on the back end. I had it in the mock draft. A scout told me body-wise, he's Derwin James. Play-wise, he's Minkah Fitzpatrick because of what he can do with coverage. I think he's got a little better cloud coverage ability. But, I mean, five interceptions last year are hard to argue with. And I've talked to scouts who already say, like, we love this player. To Jordan's point, there are probably teams that won't have him rated as highly, which is why he's here at 22 overall. But, you know, for the Chargers who have to deal with Patrick Mahomes twice a year and you got to get over that hump in the AFC West, I think a player who has this range and that appetite for the football in the air, when Mahomes is pulling the chain and making some of those second effort plays, having a safety like this with that size covering up in the back end would be huge.
So if the Chargers have actual Derwin James plus a guy who's got the body of Derwin James, right? Pretty sweet.
Yeah. It's a good problem.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say him pairing with Derwin James is perfect because Derwin James can take care of that underneath stuff while he just plays center field.
Yeah. Oh, man. Derwin James, one of the few guys that I had the chance to see in person when I was living in Boston. My wife is a BC grad, and we saw him up close and personal. And you're just like, yeah, it's going to work in the NFL, right? Like, you know, I mean, I guess playing in the ACC, there were a few more of those, but some games were more lightly attended at BC than others. Like when Clemson came to town at the apex of like Trevor Lawrence time, that was a game that was, you know, often quite busy, hard to get a ticket to. When Florida State was kind of down and Derwin James was playing there in like, you know, mid-November and it was 12 degrees out, he still looked like he was sort of a little bit built differently, if you will, than the rest of the players on that field. We'll go to pick 32 here, Matt, and more Texas love. And do the Chiefs have their heir apparent for Travis Kelce?
Jordan's smiling. I promise this isn't just because I'm a Texas fan, guys. They actually have. They have a lot of
talent. They're undefeated as of right now. Yeah.
Don't let them out on that field. I don't believe it.
It's just a ton of talent in Austin. Now, will they live up to it is the question. But Jatavion Sanders was the surprise last year for the Longhorns. I mean, they have not had a tight end like this since Jermichael Finley. But 6'4".
Been a while, huh?
245 pounds. We talked about Brock Bowers. Sanders isn't quite in that area, but he is a special player. And I know a lot of people are going to say, oh gosh, given the Chiefs tight end in the first round, Travis Kelce can't play forever, I don't think. I mean, he turns 34 this season. He's obviously been incredibly successful off the field with his podcast, with his media ventures. Yep. He's going to be just fine once his playing days are over. The Chiefs, though, they rely on that number one target at the tight end position. We have not yet seen a wide receiver step up into that role. Maybe it happens this year, but if Sanders is there, I think this is an easy way to slide someone in that Kelce can then mentor and before that expectation is placed on them.
All right. So what do you think, Jordan? Is he getting a little bit in over his skis here, throwing another Texas player in, or does Jatavion Sanders deserve to be a pick 32?
Let's just throw all the Texas guys in. Who 32 else? Guys from
right,
Texas.
Right. Why not? Right.
Wait till next year. We'll get Banks in there at left tackle.
Oh, trust me. Yeah, he's special. It's hard to keep eyes off of him watching Quinn Ewers. But yeah, Sanders, he's kind of a Gerald Everett type. That's kind of the body type that he has. Yeah. More of an F type of tight end that you can move around. And just researching these guys, it's funny just seeing them now. And you have to, that's why it's so important to research them. He actually came to Texas as a defensive end. They thought he was going to have his hand in the dirt and be rushing the quarterback, but they flip him over the tight end. Just a big athlete. And that's what he is. That's what he is, running around out there. Fantastic catch radius. Needs to get a little bit better as a blocker. But that's not really the name of his game. Honestly, you're putting him in the game to really stretch the field vertically. And then he can run some intermediate and short stuff too. So Sanders is definitely a guy that I think is going to benefit from Quinn Ewers potentially playing better this year. And if Quinn Ewers does take that next step, Sanders is going to be a big reason behind that.
I'm not going to lie. I wasn't nervous about Texas until this podcast. Right? Because it's like, unfortunately for your team, Matt, recently, it's like when the expectations are the highest, sometimes things go the exact opposite. So maybe, just maybe, Texas puts it all together this season, because if your mock is any indicator, there is plenty of talent for Sark and Crow to work with down there in Austin. There are more than 32 picks in every single draft. As we have seen every year of the NFL draft, players not taken in the first round make a huge difference. There are also guys who rise from seemingly out of nowhere into the first round because of a great final season of college. Let's wrap things up here with, and both of you guys, Jordan, I'll start with you. Is there a player or players that come to mind that you're like, it's not fully realized yet, but if he puts it together for one final season, he will be inside our top 32?
Yeah, it's two guys for me, and both of them were easy evaluations. The first one is Nate Wiggins, a cornerback from Clemson. He comes from Westlake High School, and we've seen guys come out of there like Pac-Man Jones, Cam Newton, AJ Terrell. So he comes from a terrific breed
of
high school football. Not too bad, right?
Yeah.
he was terrific last year. And, you know, the Wake Forest game is probably my favorite to watch of him, just because they went after him. And he had some struggles early on, but he ended up getting the game-saving deflection at the end, there in the end of that game. So Nate Wiggins from Clemson is one that I'm going to have pretty highly on my initial draft board that comes out here very soon. Then another is safety Javon Bullard from Georgia. He played nickel corner for them last year, and Kirby Smart already came out and said he's the leader on our defense. So Javon Bullard is another to keep an eye on.
And how about you, Matt? Who are some players that come to mind as potential risers this upcoming season?
Yeah, I'm going to go two guys from the same college. I'm going to go to Duke, where quarterback Riley Leonard and offensive tackle Graham Barton are two players that when I put this mock draft out, I had scouts texting me like, you got to get those guys in there. Like they have a very, very good chance to rise into that range. Now, Riley Leonard is not your first guy off the bus. The arm strength isn't amazing, but it's funny that we make this comparison now, but like if you're looking for someone that can play that Brock Purdy role of like, do what your coach tells you, execute the offense, throw a catchable ball, get to the right spot. Like that's Riley Leonard. I mean, the touch timing is beautiful. And Graham Barton to his own right at tackle is someone that I do think this is such a great offensive tackle class, by the way. Like if your team needs an offensive tackle, this is a great year because there might be eight that we talk about as top 40 prospects, but Graham Barton definitely deserves to be in that running as a late first rounder, maybe at this point.
I saw the upcoming director for was it Duke Clemson week one, right? We're past weeks here, week one. So Duke Clemson, and he could not stop telling me about how special he thinks this entire, well, maybe not the entire Duke offense is, but like there's some talent here, right? And like, you know, when your quarterback's got a chance to be maybe top 50 pick by the time it's all said and done, you've got a chance to be a really good football team this year. So before we say goodbye, and we covered a lot of ground here, so it was a lot of fun. Do we have anything coming down the pike that people should be keeping their eyes out for you, Jordan, content-wise? Everybody can find you on Twitter, X, whatever it is, if they haven't already, because you're constantly, like Matt, churning out great, great draft content, whether it's nuggets, info, video, you name it. Anything else coming around the corner that we should be aware of, though?
So you can find me on X at Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N underscore
yep.
R-E-I-D.
Yep.
I'm posting film clips all the time. I'm talking about life in general, too. So you never know what's going to come out of my Twitter account.
Yep.
You can find me on there. We also have our positional top fives coming out very soon, our top 32 big boards. So we're both excited about that. And then I'll be at Duke Clemson on Monday. So I'm looking. I'm looking forward to getting a close look at Riley Leonard. And, you know, Clemson's loaded on defense. So we could be here all day talking about their guys and then Graham Barton as well.
Yeah. All right, Matt, how about you? What's coming around the corner?
Yeah, man, I'm excited for those top fives each position. I'm excited to see who Mel has, who's not on the pod with us today. I cannot wait to rip him over his pick. So that's going to be a lot of fun. But we have a lot of great content coming out all season. I've got a couple different pieces I'm working on, talking to scouts about Caleb Williams, Marvin Harrison, to give you guys not just our opinions, but to take you kind of into those draft rooms and see what teams are saying about these players and some of those perspectives. So I'm excited to get those out for everyone.
None of us are going to be able to contain ourselves with Caleb this year. If Saturday night was any sort of indication, and spare me your, but it was San Jose State stuff. I get it. That's college football. You don't play Alabama every single week, but the kid is special. And I think we should all take this time to realize that it's much more enjoyable to actually like not take for granted this ride that could be ahead. We've only had one 2-time Heisman Trophy winner in the history of the award. I think this is the best chance we'll ever see for a guy to join Archie Griffin as a 2-time Heisman Trophy winner. So let's all enjoy the Caleb Williams experience for this upcoming year. And I think first draft will be back probably in like a month or so. We're going to try to give you guys a bit more during the season than we have in prior years, because normally we pick things back up after the regular season is over. That's not going to be the case, because if you're anything like Jordan and Matt, you live and breathe the NFL, which is probably why you're listening to this show right now. We'll talk to you guys again soon. Go find Matt, NFL Draft Scout, on Twitter. Jordan gave you his handle, Jordan_Reed. Until we talk to you guys next time, enjoy some college football. It is finally here.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.